Excuse me, mister, but isn't that your oil in the sea? And the pollution in the air, Mr. Hose, could that be? So excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too. And you're giving mister the bad name, mister like you. Now I'm taking the mister from out in front of your name.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Aaron Viles, who leads the Gulf Restoration Network's response to the BP drilling disaster and the organization's efforts to protect and restore coastal habitats throughout the Gulf. He serves on the executive committee of the Delta Chapter of the Sierra Club, the board of advisors to the Gulf Coast Fund for Community Renewal and Ecological Health, the Marine Fish Conservation Network, and previously served on Governor Bobby Jindal's Environmental Transition Team. Welcome to Background Briefing.
Thanks so much for having me.
So tomorrow, Friday, will be the second anniversary of the BP disaster, the blowout. And it's extraordinary to think that 2 years later, the Congress has yet to pass one piece of legislation addressing the BP oil spill, and that the Justice Department has not filed any complaints. Nobody's gone to jail. Nobody's been arrested. Nobody's been indicted.
No, it's outrageous, really, the kind of lack of action on a number of fronts. And I think you've nailed one of them. The Department of Justice has not actually filed criminal proceedings yet. That's a real problem. And the Congress hasn't done anything to protect or restore this very much threatened ecosystem. So we're here in the Gulf. We're watching the oil. It's showing up every day. We've got a wide swath of the Gulf that's still just being pummeled by tarballs. And very good research just came out this week showing toxic components still in that oil 2 years later. And it's something that the BP is spending lots of money putting out ads, getting everyone to think that it's all shiny and happy down here. But there's some trouble on the horizon, some trouble in the ecosystem, and some things that should make us all very nervous as we kind of watch this disaster unfold.
So all of that happy talk, and they usually use minority spokesperson BP to say that the business is back, tourism's back, fishing's back, you see people eating seafood, but you're saying that the dolphins are dying and there's problems with the oysters and other fisheries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've talked to a lot of oystermen down in South Plaquemines Parish and, talking a lot about how their oyster spats aren't really setting, so they kind of baby oysters aren't showing up like they should be this time of year, which means they're going to be looking at problems 4 years down the line because it takes a while for an oyster to grow. So I think there's some real problems with the kind of long-term recovery of this ecosystem. There's some stuff that it's really troubling, this kind of sublethal impacts that we're seeing in the Gulf killifish, which is a really important bait fish. Good research that was done that showed very clearly the polycyclical aromatic hydrocarbons, these PAHs, the toxic constituents of BP's oil, very much affected the fish. So they've got gill damage, their hearts aren't developing properly, things that aren't necessarily killing the fish outright, but that makes them a lot more susceptible to other environmental stressors. Again, it's a sublethal impact, these things that can kind of snowball, cascade, and accumulate. And that's when we look at things like the Exxon Valdez as a guide, sort of historical precedent. The herring fishery in Alaska didn't collapse 1 year or 2 years after their oil spill. It collapsed 4 seasons after that Exxon Valdez oil spill. So we're not even close to out of the woods at this point.
Well, but also after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the Oil Pollution Act of 1990 was passed, and after the Santa Barbara oil spill of 1969, Earth Day was created, and in many ways that was the beginning of the modern environmental movement. Nothing much has happened since the BP disaster in terms of galvanizing the environmental movement.
No, I think that's true, and I think it's really unfortunate. I mean, maybe if this had happened in Santa Barbara or in more picturesque Prince William Sound, we'd see a more significant response. But here in the Gulf, we've been here for 18 years looking to restore it. It's certainly something we've been fighting every day for our entire organizational history. But what we saw is that, the nation has kind of disaster ADD now. And I think the 24-hour news cycle does not help us to kind of see things through to some sort of conclusion until we get some sort of response. There was also an election that I think really put us in a horrible situation. Because if you remember, you know, when the BP disaster happened, actually some of the environmental movement's best friends were heading up some of the House committees that deal with these types of issues. But then there was an election, things transitioned, and some of the environmental movement's worst enemies were then in charge of these committees. And the problem went from BP, their cleanup response, the oil and its impacts, to the Obama administration not letting drilling happening quick, getting drilling happening quick enough in the Gulf of Mexico. So that transition and that pivot was really problematic. You know, the media story, you know, the oil didn't disappear when the Chilean miners were trapped, but our national and international media attention certainly did. And if it's, you know, kind of, if you don't hear about the story, it must be okay. And so that was something that I think hurt our ability to really kind of take some of the recommendations that were being made by some really kind of blue ribbon commissions, some kind of very august bodies that had some really great thinkers about what we could do better. You know, that's, those recommendations kind of landed with a thud, unfortunately.
Well, elections have consequences. And in 2010, the Republicans won back the House. And they, as you've mentioned, they totally changed the agenda. And recently, the president tried to end government subsidies for oil companies who were making record profits and was shut down very quickly by the Republicans. So, but then you have down in your state, Louisiana, you have very oil-friendly Democrats, right?
By and large, yeah. I mean, the entire delegation in Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, these guys are all very much like the oil industry. And like I said, they were outraged by the response to the BP disaster, and they're mostly outraged because they had stopped oil drilling. So that was, I think, really troubling, and we didn't have the kind of leadership we really needed.
So is there any leadership that you see, or are you left with just grassroots activism?
Well, we certainly have that. We've got a very robust, you know, movement of, you know, kind of scrappy groups down here that are working really hard to make a difference. One thing that is happening as we speak is the House of Representatives did pass this thing called the Restore the Gulf Coast Act, which they did it in a way that is very kind of ugly sausage making. They attached it to a transportation bill. I think in the same time they're attaching the Keystone XL pipeline to this transportation bill, so kind of forcing the Sophie's choice on the environmental movement. But what we do know is the Restore Act is kind of one of these, you know, very much no-brainer legislation. It basically changes the law so that BP's Clean Water Act fines, which are, you know, billions of dollars. It's a remaining liability that hasn't been settled, but it's anywhere from $5 to as much as $20 billion that BP will have to pay for this historic oil spill. And it will change the law so that money doesn't go into the black hole of the federal treasury, but this amazing windfall historic oil spill fine will go to empower a historic environmental restoration project in the Gulf of Mexico. And it's something that totally makes sense. It's only fair, you know, that the ecosystem that BP's oil is now helping to threaten gets restored to a sustainable point by these fines. But so that happened. It was passed by the House. The Senate passed something similar. They're going to need to reconcile their two transportation bills. But, you know, what I think that does mean is, you know, depending on how this all plays out, we could see in the next few weeks finally a piece of legislation signed that does do something for the Gulf in the wake of the disaster. So there might be a ray of hope out there. But, again, we're going to need to see some leadership, because I know there's international concern about the Keystone Pipeline. So that's something that's going to be wrestled with. And like I said, it's sausage making, and it's kind of ugliest right now. But we think at the end of the line, we could see these historic Clean Water Act fines, which, you know, the Department of Justice is going to have to get aggressive and actually get from BP. But that could go to restoration initiatives down here in the Gulf that are long needed.
Again, I'm speaking with Aaron Viles, who leads the Gulf Restoration Network's response to the BP drilling disaster and the organization's efforts to protect and restore coastal habitats throughout the Gulf. He serves on the executive committee of the Delta Chapter of the Sierra Club, the board of advisors for the Gulf Coast Fund for Community Renewal and Ecological Health, the Marine Fish Conservation Network, and previously worked on Governor Bobby Jindal's environmental transition team. How is Governor Jindal handling this? Has he gone over to the dark side, or?
Well, I think Governor Jindal probably started on the dark side, honestly. I think the man, he's part of this whole Louisiana political establishment that loves the oil industry and everything they want to do. So, I think Bobby Jindal was relatively forceful in a few efforts that were really important. One thing that's very interesting about Louisiana, even though it is a relatively, it's a very red state, and it very much, doesn't have a lot of concern about environmental issues. One issue does, in fact, resonate, and that's Louisiana's coastal wetlands crisis. So we have seen, Louisiana is losing wetlands at an unprecedented rate. Our coastal wetlands, because of how we've managed the Mississippi River for shipping and for flood control, how we've allowed the oil industry to historically dredge thousands of miles of canals through the marsh, we're losing a football field of wetlands turning to open water every hour. And that is something that makes our communities far more vulnerable. It means the fisheries are losing their most important nursery ground. And BP's oil was basically washing up in an ecosystem that was in a crisis state. Governor Jindal has been very good about pressuring President Obama to commit to the long-term restoration of this ecosystem. And I think, very much willingly, President Obama has been a partner on that. So I think there's some stuff that they've actually been very good at and worked together well at. The state of Louisiana, even though they're now letting teachers teach alternative theories to global warming in our schools, they put together a very good science report that looks at how you restore these coastal wetlands, and it in fact does take into consideration sea level rise. So we've got a plan to spend the BP funds, if they do in fact arrive down here, in a way that's science-driven, that will put our wetlands on a path to sustainability and will ensure that, we're here for the long haul. So I think it's an interesting mix, because Bobby Jindal and President Obama very much have different constituencies, and they're both politicians. They both play to their constituencies, but there is some common ground here in that they both are very much committed to Louisiana's coastal wetlands and doing something that's, to the scale necessary to put them on a path towards sustainability.
Again, I'm speaking with Aaron Viles, who leads the Gulf Restorations Network's response to the BP drilling disaster and the organization's efforts to protect and restore coastal habitats throughout the Gulf. And of course, tomorrow, Friday, April the 20th, is the two-year anniversary of BP's Deepwater Horizon rig explosion in the Gulf of Mexico, which killed 11 workers and poured 200 million gallons of oil into the Gulf waters. And of course, Sunday, April the 22nd, is Earth Day. When you talk about, though, restoring the ecosystem down there at the end of the Mississippi where it meets the Gulf, and the you mentioned the erosion that's going on. Isn't so much of that, though, a result of the diversion of the Mississippi, the work of the Army Corps of Engineers? That had the Army Corps of Engineers, after all, they were in many ways responsible for the Katrina catastrophe. If they hadn't meddled so much with the Mississippi, nature would be taking care and building these barrier islands.
Well, theoretically. I think, if we look back at what has been done in the Mississippi River Delta since 1927, the great flood there that, after which the Corps of Engineers committed to not letting the Mississippi River flood again, and, I think, yes, there likely would have been less of an impact from Hurricane Katrina because we probably wouldn't have seen levee failures. We would have seen wetlands and ecosystems out there to buffer the storm surge that came in. But, I think we got to play the hand we're dealt. And at this point, we've got the Mississippi River, which has been constrained and straitjacketed. So it's dumping sediment and fresh water just straight out into the deep water of the Gulf of Mexico. What we also have, though, is another example, which is the Atchafalaya River, which splits off north of Baton Rouge and carries about a third of the Mississippi River's flow. That is a much different story because we did not straitjacket the Atchafalaya. We let it kind of continue as a wild river basin. And it's building land right now. It's building marsh. It's building with sediment loads. It's creating land in the face of sea level rise. So we know that if we kind of get out of nature's way and put the river back into some of these marsh ecosystems, we can put it on the path towards sustainability. But yes, there's a certain irony in that we will likely use the Corps of Engineers as one of the tools in the toolbox to do these restoration projects. They've got to be at the table because they manage that river. Some say mismanaged, but it's certainly something where the science is in. We know we can build land with these diversions. We just need to kind of let the river do its business into these areas that certainly, without it, will be washing away, will be turning to open water each and every hour. Again, another football field disappearing. So it's something we can kind of put into a different track. But yeah, there's a lot of irony in the Corps of Engineers being a significant seat at the table as we implement these plans.
So there are serious plans then to divert the rivers back into the wetlands.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we can't do it without it. Sure. And it's certainly something that's not without some controversy. And, you know, some of the fishermen that we work with very closely on the BP response, you know, get very concerned when you talk about river diversions because you do change the salinity regime in certain areas. But again, without that change, we just are all losers because we'll not see that marsh sustain itself. It's going to be gone. So, it's a very big undertaking. It's expensive. I mean, the state's plan alone is a $50 billion initiative, but spending that over 50 years. And it's certainly something that, you know, without it, we're going to be, you know, just New Orleans will be kind of a city, and it'll be an island there in the Gulf Coast because it won't have the marsh and the swamp and the barrier islands around it that it really needs to protect itself. So the nation's already committed about $15 billion to helping New Orleans recover its levee system that was supposed to be strong enough to deal with Katrina. What we say is that, look, the marsh restoration that's around that is, it's really, you know, taking care of that investment. And all the sweat equity that all these kind of community groups that have come down in New Orleans helped us recover over the past 7 years in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. You know, these folks have put a lot of time and energy and resources. We've got to protect that investment by doing the wetlands restoration, which, of course, if you do that, there's all sorts of other ancillary benefits for the rest of the nation, the fisheries, the shipping, all the value to the habitat, which, you know, folks who go duck hunting in Minnesota really need Louisiana's coastal wetlands to help protect the habitats that all these different species rely on.
Well, just in closing, Aaron Viles, a couple of days ago I interviewed a former Deputy Attorney General. We're talking about President Obama's appearance in the Rose Garden with Eric Holder and other officials announcing that they're going to get tough on oil speculation, which is responsible for about 40% of the price of gasoline, the gaming that's going on Wall Street. And the former Deputy Attorney General said to me that perhaps the president was trying to embarrass Holder by literally putting him on camera because he's been so hopeless at going after. Nobody's gone to jail for what happened in 2008 on Wall Street. Nobody's gone to jail over the ripping off of American consumers and gouging them at the pump by Wall Street predators and parasites, and nobody's gone to jail for the BP oil disaster. So do you think the top cop on America's top cop on the beat is going to step up?
It's an interesting question, and we certainly hope so, because we talk about these Clean Water Act fines, that this liability of $5 to as much as $20 billion. You know, the best way to get the most out of that is having a very aggressive Department of Justice showing, you know, that BP spilled as much oil as possible, making the case that BP was grossly negligent and cutting corners, you know, from a cost perspective, cost driving that decision making process, which, you know, in all the analysis I've seen seems pretty obvious. But you do need, you know, really top attorneys making that case, making it hard against BP so they come to the table and pay the most fines possible. So we need DOJ to step up here. They made a big show of coming down to New Orleans. We've got a very aggressive U.S. Attorney's Office in New Orleans, and they've done a lot of great work on corruption and a lot of great work in kind of finding the money after Katrina to make sure it wasn't going awry. But, you know, without really got good leadership, I think, you know, taking on BP is something we're going to need Holder to truly get behind. And they did a big press conference talking about how they're going to go after BP with all the, you know, the weight of the federal government. But that's been a while. We have not seen those criminal charges filed. And I think it's really time to amp up the pressure on BP, because gosh knows they're getting lots of good publicity that they're buying, of course, telling their side of the story. It's time for the federal government to tell another side of it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Aaron Viles.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
Again, I'm speaking with Aaron Viles, who leads the Gulf Restoration Network's response to the BP oil disaster and the organization's efforts to protect and restore coastal habitats throughout the Gulf. He serves on the executive committee of the Delta Chapter of the Sierra Club, the board of advisors to the Gulf Coast Fund for Community Renewal and Ecological Health, the Marine Fish Conservation Network, and previously worked on Governor Bobby Jindal's Environmental Transition Team. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back as Earth Day approaches. We'll be back talking about what you can do to stop global warming.